This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. For more than 20 years, KPP Financial has been helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. And now, today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Invest Talk. It is February 22nd, 2017, and we're all about above-average investing for the average investor. We're here to help you make better money decisions. Our live listener line is open right now. You can check in right at this moment, 888-99-CHART. That's the number, and give us a call anytime. As you know, we get questions about stocks that you may come across and look like they have promise. And we get a lot of those questions. Within the general question, there's the issue of what is it worth? I always say, well, what do you think it's worth? What is the stock really worth? Is it over or undervalued? And learning to put a value on a company is a difficult skill to master. It's not easy. There are so many factors that affect how much investors are willing to pay for a company and how durable their growth will be long term. Many people use PE ratios. We talk about them here on the show all the time. And that is a rough guide to determine valuations. But there are flaws in that metric. One is the E, earnings, PE ratio, earnings. Earnings can be easily manipulated by accounting tricks. Sometimes they're hard to decipher for the average person. It's hard. Two, the average PE ratios are different between industries. It's not the same for commodity stocks versus technology stocks. The PE ratios is much higher for faster growing companies and faster growing industries. So what is that industry's average PE? So you got to look at other metrics like free cash flow. How about free cash flow yield? Now, that's a figure derived by dividing the annual free cash flow a company generates by the total market cap of the company. That gives you a yield. Anytime this figure approaches 10%, you're usually getting a pretty good bargain. I'd like to see it around 5% mark in this current interest rate environment that we're in. Return to equity, ROE. ROE. It's a profitability measure. How much money or profits does the company make on its resources that it has, return on its equity? And I like to see it in the teens, return on equity in the teens, 17, 15, 18, 13%, depending on the industry. And growth rates, how fast the company's growing. You know, even big blue chip stocks, you really want some growth. They're not going to grow like small companies. And if you buy small companies, you want huge growth. Big companies can't grow as fast, but you always want some growth, some sustainability of that company. Anyways, those are some of the other metrics. I won't go into all of them. Obviously, it would take hours and days. Do you have questions about evaluating a stock? Let's hear from you. We're ready for the questions and comments. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's go to the phones and take the question. Let's go talk to Bruce in Fresno. How you doing, Bruce?
Good, Steve. I'm wondering about Vodafone and if Vodafone is considered a deep value now. I know it's under its book value, and if it isn't, is it still? Do you think the dividend is pretty safe? I mean, if I had to hold it for a long time.
Well, I'll tell you this: the cash flow. I say the dividend is not safe. Is not, because their cash flow is only 9 cents a share now. I mean, this is Vodafone, everybody. VOD is the symbol. It's out of the United Kingdom, a UK-based provider of digital wireless voice data services and to 462 million mobile customers in 26 countries. It's a $67 billion company, and it's selling for $25.50. And the problem you have, Bruce, is that the earnings in 2016 was 89 cents a share. This year it's going to be 67 cents, and then next year it's going to pop up a little bit to 73 cents. And so that tells you the stock itself is not really cheap because, it's a $25 stock going to make 73 cents. That's 20-something PE when sales are going down about 20% for the last two quarters, 20 to 30%. So it's hemorrhaging sales. Not a lot of debt, though, which is good. It's just, I still think it's expensive. you need a PE around, the low PE range is about 7 or so. The 5.9% dividend, so it's almost 6%, meaning that if it's 6% on $25, it's like $1.50, and it's only going to make 73 cents, and it only has free cash flow of 9 cents, so that dividend is going to be cut. That's what I think, Bruce.
So, okay, real good.
Okay, so I'm not keen on it. I'm not keen on the stock yet. Vodafone, everybody. Thank you, Bruce. How many funds do you need to diversify your portfolio? We're talking about how many funds do you need? And that's going to be one of our talking points. Need is the word. How many funds do you need? Not how many you want. How many do you need? We're going to talk about that. World economies by GDP. World economy. So what happened is there was a little globe that I saw, and it broke down the world of what economies around the world had what percentage of the world GDP. And U.S. was highest at 24.32%. But what about the rest? Some interesting comparisons that I want to talk about. Tax scams. You know, at that time of year, it's end of February, moving to March, things are happening. I want to talk about three of them just briefly to watch out for. And finally, the existing home sales report came out today. And it was interesting because I know a lot of people were thinking, oh, home sales are going to fall. These are existing homes, not new homes, but existing home sales. So what did it tell us about that? And I thought those are three things I wanted to talk about. But you may want to talk about something, and that's okay with me, something else. If you want to talk about something else, you bring up the topic, I'll talk about it. The Dow is up again, 31 points today. What is that, 8 days in a row the Dow's been up or something, all record highs? The NASDAQ was down 5 and the S&P down 3. So we've got a market that's starting to hesitate a little bit, but no one can know. No one does know. No one can predict. No one can time the market. I repeat myself ad nauseum about trying to time the market. You can't. It's impossible. Don't think about it. Not going to work. Nope. Okay? So you stay with the market. You ride the ride. And the only thing you can do is at some point you can hedge yourself if you like by going to cash or having a small inverse fund. But stay with your solid core stocks and don't get panicky. Not time yet. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. In addition to your money questions, I want to hear your investing stories. If you got any that you want to share, tell us about the mix of your portfolio. Why do you have that? One of the things you really need to know, you need to decide what kind of investor you want to be. If you made that decision, 888-99-CHARGE, our live listener line, every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time.
Hi, Steve. This is Mike from Portland, listening to the podcast. And I've got some money, a couple hundred thousand, sitting in a money market account, not doing too much. So I thought of taking $100,000 of that and putting it in some specific stocks, looking at some tech stocks and seeing that they're going up pretty well, but not putting it all into one, put it into a couple for diversification. So I was thinking 40% of that into Facebook, 20% into Amazon, 20% into Google, and then just for another nod of diversification, putting the last 20% into Delta Airlines technology, but something that looks like it's got some strong recommendations to the positive. So wonder what you thought of that approach, strategy. Got $1.5 million or so in a company stock and 401k that's sort of the basis of the long-term portfolio, and just kind of playing around a little bit with this $100,000 chunk. Be interested in what you have to say. Thanks.
Okay, I think that's a mistake. I think the reason why a mistake, you're putting too much in any one of those stocks. If you're going to take half of that $200,000, let's say $100,000, I think you need to buy like 20 different stocks. I don't have a problem with the choices you made because they're high tech, but then you need to spread out in different sectors. I might suggest some commodity stocks. I might suggest other types of industries that might benefit from what Trump is doing. Banking, infrastructure type companies. And the reason I'm telling you this is because you want proper diversification. If you put 20% or something, I never put more than 5% in any one stock to start off with. I usually do 3%, 3%. But if you pick the wrong technology stock, and you don't, it could go down simply because of something out of left field that you couldn't prevent. You had no idea that there was a problem, maybe with the bookkeeping or the CEO got arrested for something. You don't know. And it could be out of left field. That's why you never want to put too much in any one stock. So please don't put more than about 5% in any one of those issues. And then diversify away from some of the tech. That tech is a high growth part of the market. And I'd rather see you buy some value stocks, maybe buy some core dividend payers, you know, big blue chip dividend paying stocks that are not overvalued at this point. There's a few left, not many, but there's a few out there. Once you just have to spread it out. That's all I'm telling you, is you got to spread it out and not be too heavy in any few stocks. That's one of the big dangers that people do when they first start out. They just say, well, I'm going to throw it in these stocks. These are great stocks. And they are. Everyone you listed is a great stock. It's great. But it's still very risky when you concentrate your money. Now, you could be a great hero when you concentrate your money, because if it works, you think you're a genius. And for that length of time that it works, you are. But you need to manage the risk that you're taking, and that's not managing the risk. Okay, give me a call if you want to talk about it in specifics. I'd be happy to talk to you about specifics, what you can invest in. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what is it on your mind? What do you want to talk about? How about how many mutual funds you need to own? Okay, I'm going to tell you, maybe 5, 6, in general mutual funds, large cap fund, a domestic large cap stock fund, a small cap domestic fund, maybe an international fund, maybe an emerging market fund. And notice I didn't say mid cap, because maybe your large cap or your small cap has a lot of mid cap in it. You have to take a look. But the only way you need more than 5 or 6 is when you start getting into sector-specific funds. And then you can have more just because you're in sector-specific. But the more specific you get, the higher the risk you go. So you got to be very careful. But there's too much overlap. If you buy a large-cap growth fund from Vanguard and then a large-cap growth fund from, I don't know, Fidelity, they're going to have a lot of the same funds. So you don't need to. Now, even if you have a large cap growth fund and a large cap value fund, you still are going to have some overlap. You have to see. You have to look inside, find out what their top holdings are and compare them. But really, we're talking about what you really need. You don't need a lot of mutual funds. You don't. You know, I've seen people have 15, 20 mutual funds, and it's just totally redundant. And there's no reason to have that kind of thing. This is InvestTalk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. Are you taking more risk than you realize? When you use our free risk analysis tool, it's free. Remember the word free. You can learn how much risk tolerance you actually have. Then I can put your portfolio and see how much risk is in that portfolio and compare it with your own personal risk tolerance. It's free. It only takes a few minutes to answer a few questions and start the process. You just go to InvestTalk.com.
Gentlemen, this is Dan from Seattle. Really appreciate the show. I bought Unilever, UN, whenever you guys were talking about it a month or two ago at $39 a share, and I'm sure you saw it. Today, it jumped 14% because Kraft made an offer to buy them out. I don't understand why it went up that much, because I guess they refused the offer. So if you could explain that, like what happened, and if you think it's a good time to, you know, sell back some profits, or if it's going to stay up there, or I just don't understand what happened. I'm trying to read these articles, and all it says is that they were made an offer, they rejected it. So I'm confused. Any help would be much appreciated. Thank you.
very valid question, and we don't. We own it in one of our accounts. We sold it out of two others on the day they made that offer because it got up to $48, $49 a share from $42 in just one day. And so we took profits on a couple in a couple of our accounts. We owned it across the board. We like Unilever. UN is a symbol. British Dutch producer of food, detergents, personal care, so on and so forth. So they were being offered, an offer was made to buy them out. Now, when a company makes an offer to buy another company out, even if they reject it, that doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. It could be a hostile takeover. But when that offer is made, the psychology in the marketplace is, oh, so someone likes this company, Unilever, enough to make an offer at much higher prices than it's currently selling at. And even if they reject it, maybe they're just asking for more money. Maybe they're expecting a better buyout offer. Or another competitor will come in and snap them up, try to buy them. See, the psychology is, remember, Unilever is a $132 billion company. It's huge. It's not going to be easy to swallow. But that's the thinking, and that's why it's still, what, $46.75 today. It fell down to $45 the day after the offer was made, which is about halfway, and then it popped up again today. So it's still on the table. That's the thinking. They're still on the table. The offer is still there, even though they rejected it. Think about it this way. Someone offers you to buy your house, and it's, you know, they offered less than you thought it was worth. You said, no, I don't want it. Maybe they'll come back and offer you more money. Right? That's the thinking. So think about that. Widen that across a whole market of a bunch of people in the marketplace, the stock market. And they're all thinking that. Maybe that's a better offer. Until they're pretty sure it's that's not happening, then you'll see that stock go right back down to where it was before. When they're convinced psychologically that the offers, no more offers are coming. Right now, they think that there's going to be some more offers. They may be wrong, but that's what the thinking is. Let's go to Joe in Santa Ana. How you doing, Joe?
I'm pretty good, Steve. How are you?
Good. You're right up the street from me. I am San Juan Capistrano.
Yep. I got a couple questions for you, if I may.
Sure.
Is there any advantage to buying stocks in 100 round lots anymore in these days?
Well, you know, it's gone. It really used to be that's the way you bought it, because if you didn't, you got really bad fills. But now with electronic trading, not necessarily, Joe. No. Especially if a stock is big and liquid. Not really. Nope. I'm going to say no. It's going away. And for everybody else who hasn't been around, I don't know how old you are, Joe, but for me, it hadn't been around for a long time. You know, if you didn't buy 100 round lots, you really got bad fills. In other words, a bad price, or you couldn't, you know, it was just not very good. You couldn't get it done. Now, with the computer trading one share at a time, you could do it. Yeah. No one cares.
That's what I thought maybe was the case, but I just wanted to understand for sure.
Yeah, pretty much.
One more question, if I may.
Sure.
Can you explain the reason that a mutual fund or an ETF might return capital as part of a distribution?
Yeah, they sometimes do that because that's the only reason they exist, is to give people high dividends, and they're in love with it. And, you know, in love with the dividends, that's why they bought the ETF or mutual fund. And the ETF or mutual fund didn't make enough money to pay them the high dividends. So they said, well, why don't I give them, we'll give them back some of their own capital. And it's like, well, wait a minute, you're just giving me back my own money. What good is that? You know, from my thinking, it's like, what good is that?
Yeah.
But from their thinking.
That's not the reason you invested in the product.
That's right. So, but from their point of view, they want to keep, you know, the uninformed investors happy. Okay? That's what they're really trying to do. Okay?
All righty.
Thanks,
all
right, Joe.
Appreciate the information.
Good.
Thank you.
Couple of good questions. Right. Appreciate it. Thank you, Joe. 888-99-CHART, world's economies by GDP. Of course, ours is the biggest. Ours is the biggest, and we're going to get into all the others. I want to get into what some of the comparisons of the smaller ones. And you probably can get number one and number two. What do you think is number three? And four, and 5. How close are they? Interesting numbers. And how big are they? Which is really the interesting part. Anyways, we're at halfway mark of this Wednesday afternoon, everybody. Let's hear your money questions. I'd like to hear them right now. 888-99-CHARTER is our number. 888-992-4278.
Our podcast continues next. But first, we wanted you to know that KPP offers 5 individual investment programs that are geared to match up with various life situations, including those invested in their employer's 401k program. These programs vary in design and purpose, from aggressive to those looking for optimum growth to those designed to keep risk at an absolute minimum. And at KPP Financial, you can be assured that they're investing their own money in the same programs. It's called parallel investing, and it's really your assurance of their continuous vigilance. When you're ready, you can see more about these programs on investtalk.com. Just click on the Investments tab. And now we continue with our podcast today. On our next Invest Talk, weak results haven't stopped another pack of Wall Street pros from predicting 2017 to be a breakthrough year. 2016 was bad for stock picking. Could 2017 be better? That's one of our topics next time on Invest Talk. We hope you'll join us then.
Chart, let's talk to Raul from Texas. How you doing, Raul?
Very good. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for the call.
Very good. I just had a quick question with regards to Semtex, CETX. It looks like it had a huge drop today, down over 33%. And the numbers actually look pretty good from what I saw. Just a quick glance, the PE looks pretty good. Was wondering what your thoughts were on this. It looks like the drop was due to a story put on one of the websites, Seeking Alpha, I believe.
Okay. Let's see. Let's see if I can figure out the story real fast. Announces investigation involving the board of Semtex. There's some kind of investigation on the board. I wonder what they're alleging. I can't see it real fast. Possible violations of federal securities law. Okay. This kind of stuff, to me, might spell an opportunity for investors. I mean, I don't know what, I'd have to read everything there is to read about it, but companies get sued all the time. And this is a pretty big fall, but it's a, you know, the reason why it fell so hard is it's a really tiny company. Okay, it's only a $34 million company. So a lawsuit can cost them every profit they ever made just to defend themselves, even if the allegations are false. And that's why a small company will get hit really hard when a lawsuit such as this comes about, because they don't have the heft to just absorb it and hire the attorney to defend themselves. And of course, there could be true too, whatever it was. But no one really knows. And Semtex, everybody, provides electronic manufacturing services of advanced electronic systems, assemblies, monitoring, and instruments. And it was a fairly inexpensive. They're going to make 44 cents this year and 62 cents next year. It's a $3.40 stock now. It almost got cut in half. And that means it's really low priced. Really low priced. So, and its sales growth is really high. So they're being sued for some reason. Well, it could be an opportunity, but it's pretty high risk, okay? Just know that it's a pretty high risk. So only invest what you're not too worried about losing. Anyway, if it can't handle defending itself, whatever it's defending itself against. And make sure, you know, we have to really understand what's the allegations and is that going to really hurt the company that badly? You know, that's what you really got to understand. But a lot of times in a stock like this, it's kind of rolling the dice. Okay, Ro?
Yeah. I guess the follow-up question on that is, on something like this late in the day that I see, on the next morning, how do you approach that in trying to buy something the next morning when the stock market opens?
When a stock really makes a big, giant move like this in one day, It generally speaking, over the next few weeks, recovers somewhat, about 50%. That's very common, recovers. So if you wanted to take that chance, you could do so. But if the allegations are true, it's not something you want to hold on to.
Sure.
Okay?
Well,
but it usually will bounce.
It.
Thanks, Raul. I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thank you. 888-992-4278. Love to talk to you. Okay, world economies. GDP, the percentage of the world GDP, U.S. is number one at 24.32%. 24% is U.S. And then almost 15% is China. So those are the two big ones, right? The third one, maybe you might be able to guess that, and it's Japan, but it's only 5.9%. Think how big a drop that is. That's the third one. Then after that is Germany at 4.5%. Then the United Kingdom at 3.8, France at 3.2, India at 2.8, Italy at 2.4, and Brazil at 2.39. The interesting part for me is the huge drop from the U.S. and China. The U.S. is much bigger than China by 10 percentage points, 24 to 14.8. So there's a big fall from U.S. to China. And everybody's all worried about China catching up with us and all that. Well, you would think that they're so much bigger in population and size, you would think. Notice that one's not on here. Russia's nowhere near the top of the list. Isn't that interesting? It's kind of a pretty tiny country. And its landmass is huge. But as far as GDP, world GDP, not even a blip, really, on the radar. Anyways, my interest was that, you know, everybody said, oh, we got to have, we need to have the European EU to get growing. Well, the EU represents 10, 15, 20% at the most, the whole EU, 10 to 20% somewhere in that range. So on all those countries. And, you know, I was just amazed at how small of the world GDP some of these other countries that you feel are big. We are huge compared to them. Interesting, isn't it? Let's get back to the 24-hour listener line, pick up another question. 888-99-CHARGE is our anytime number.
Hi, Stephen, Justin. Long-time listener of the show. Thank you for everything that you guys do. I have a question in regard to an old... Well, all right, so it's a rollover from an old previous job, and I rolled a 401k into a traditional IRA, and after that job, I created a Roth IRA, and I still have money left in the traditional IRA. It's under $10,000, so it's not that much. But I'm wondering what I should do with it, because I don't contribute to it since I contribute just to my Roth now. But I was wondering if you had any advice of what to do with it, if I should roll it over into a Roth. I assume I would have to pay taxes on that, or if there's another option for me. But any advice you guys would have about this and what I should do would be appreciated. Thanks so much again. Bye-bye.
Okay, now a regular IRA can be rolled into a Roth IRA anytime you want to. But as soon as you do that, that money you roll over is taxed, income taxed. So it's going to be part of your income, and it's going to be at the tax rate of your income. So you're going to have to pay income tax on it when you roll it from a regular IRA to a Roth IRA. When you roll it from a 401k to an IRA after you leave a job, that's normal. But you can roll that further into a Roth if you want to. Should you, depends on how old you are. The younger you are, the more likely I would do it, and how much money you make. If you're in a top tax bracket, I tend not to want to do that. If you're in a high tax bracket, because generally you're in a lower tax bracket in retirement, and you'll pay less taxes. And just let it grow. I would, it depends on the situation, but chances are high, I just leave it alone and just contribute to your Roth, because you probably have a new 401k. You didn't mention you did, but the assumption is that you do. And that's, that is, of course, a tax-deductible money you're throwing into the 401k, and Roth is after-tax dollars. So I like to have both of those, by the way, both are after-tax and pre-tax retirement accounts. And the reason being is when you get to retirement, you can choose which one you need to take money out of and keep yourself in the lowest tax bracket. That's, I like the freedom there. I have some new dates for Northern California for individual retirement reviews. In March, I'll be in the San Jose twice. I'll be in San Jose twice, March 15th and March 25th. 15th and the 25th of March. Or if you live out of range of our California offices, we always can meet. We can meet via Skype or talk on the telephone at length. To reserve your time, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, then portfolio review.
How much time does it take to properly manage a retirement portfolio? Do I need a living trust? How much life insurance should I have? Should beginners start out with individual stocks? How much of my portfolio should be in dividend-paying stocks? All important questions. If you're looking for answers, you're welcome to ask any financial question that's important to you. 888-99-CHART is our direct line right now.
Hi, guys. This is Dan from Maryland. Big fan of the show, podcast listener. Really appreciate all the advice. I was hoping to maybe get some thoughts on Hanes Brands, HBI, and specifically a couple things that concern me thinking about opening up a long-term position. So first, I noticed that management owns such a small percentage of the company. I think it was 1.25%. And then additionally, I noticed they increased the dividend instead of paying down some of the debt. If you could give me some thoughts on how to take that into consideration, I'd really appreciate it. Thanks again.
Okay, Hanes Brands, Inc., HBI, manufactures T-shirts, bras, panties, men's underwear, kids' underwear, socks, hosiery, casual. And we own this stock in one of our managed accounts. And if you remember right, when it fell hard on earnings back at the beginning of February, people were asking me, should we get out? And I said, well, we're going to hold on to it and see how it bounces. And it went from, it fell from $23 a share all the way down to 18 or so, and now it's back at 21. So it's been recovering, and so I kind of like it. And one of the reasons why we like it is it's inexpensive. It is, it's going to make $2.14 next year. It's a $21 stock, so it's a 10 PE. The five-year average is 10 to 24, and the most recent two quarters, it grew 11 and 12% sales. So we kind of like that turnaround in sales. But you're right, there is a lot of debt. So we went to the cash flow, and can it service that debt? Is that an issue, the debt being what it is? And we felt that the cash flow, which is about $2.18 right now, was enough to handle the debt without too much problem. And so we didn't worry about it. And I don't worry about management only owning 2% because mutual funds are buyers. They've been buying it. And most recent activity, management made a couple of buys itself in September and December, September last year and December last year, a couple of good-sized buys. So management apparently thought that things are going to turn around. So I kind of like it. We own it. I like it, or else I wouldn't own it. But management owned that little, doesn't bother me. And I don't like the debt. I wish they'd pay more of it. They pay a 2.8% dividend. I would rather they not pay the dividend and pay down the debt. I'd rather them do that. But I'm not going to whine too much about it. HBI is a symbol. Hanes Brands, everybody. Tax scams. Three major tax scams are, of course, come around every year about this time. Phishing is one of them, where they fish for email. Give the scammers information so they can steal your ID and so they can then use that ID and go buy stuff, take credit cards out, whatever. And even the next biggest one would be they take that information and file a tax return in your behalf. That's big. So be careful about the information you provide to anybody that you don't know via email. Watch out. And then the third one, it fakes tax emails offering big refunds. These are tax emails that are saying, you did not take a big deduction that you could get, you could earn blah, 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 big dollars. All you do is give us this information and we'll send you that. And they pretend like they're either the the bank. They'll pretend they're the IRS. They'll pretend they're all kinds of official-looking stuff. Remember, banks, IRS, and everything else, they don't ask for your personal information over emails. They do not. Okay? So don't ever give your personal information via online when someone's asking for it. Don't. You know, unless you're the one that calls them. Okay? If you're going to call your bank, yeah, if you call your bank and you call and you're talking to your bank and you know it's your bank, yeah, you can give them information. But if they send you an email, you don't know if that's email. It could have their letterhead, it could look very official, but they never ask for personal information. Remember, they already have it. Why are they asking for it? Don't ever give it out when someone's asking for it. Okay? Unless you're the one that called them. Voicemail. We had a caller come in, and this is what they asked.
Hey, Steve, I have a question on Acadia Pharmaceuticals, ACAD. I'm wondering if you think this is still going to run or if I should take profit out and run. Thank you.
ACAD, should you take the profits? Acadia Pharmaceuticals develops small molecular drugs for the treatment of central nervous systems. Okay, it is a $4.7 billion company. I would take the profit. Very simple reason. They don't make any money. They've never made any money. They're going to lose $2.34 in their fiscal year 2016, which, of course, is just ending, and we'll get that number shortly. And then they're going to lose $2.26 next year. It's a $4.7 billion company that did $5 million in sales last quarter. Super, super overpriced. A negative cash flow of $1.63 per share? Take your profits, run. It's a $39 stock. It is stock that you do not want to own. You do not want to own this company. But now that it's made a nice run, it's right near its 52-week high, and it looks like for 4 or 5 days it's hesitating, I take the money and run. That's what I would do. That's ACAD is the symbol. You're listening to Invest Talk. Our last segment of the hour is coming up, but we can still fit you in if you have a question. 888-99-CHART. Okay, let's go to Sam in Florida. How you doing, Sam?
I love your program. Very informative.
Thank you, Sam. Appreciate it.
Sure. Wondered whether you have any thoughts on Chevron and Exxon for both short-term and long-term hold.
Long-term, you can't go wrong. Long-term, there's no way that you can make a mistake by buying Chevron. CVX is the symbol, everybody. Engage in exploration, production, refining, marketing of oil and gas. You can't go wrong long-term. Short-term, I think this is probably where you buy it. I don't know how long you've listened, but a year ago, at the beginning of a year ago, January, February, March, is when I said it's time to get into big oil. Okay, and that just happened to be near the bottom and had a great run. Now, we still own Chevron in our managed accounts, but we sold Exxon at the beginning of the year. So we took some profits in this sphere, but we still have Chevron. It pays 3.9%. It's at $110. That means a forward PE, they're going to make $6.03 next year. That means a forward PE is like 18, which is not cheap. Because a cheap one would be about 7, because that's what it was almost a year and 3 months ago, about 7. So it's not cheap anymore, but it is a pretty decent value because sales have finally turned around in the most recent quarter. Before that, sales were going down. So, Sam, you could buy that in this $110 area, and if you have a long enough perspective, you'll be fine. The other thing you can do, Sam, wait for a recession, which may not be for several years. And then buy it. But that's probably not going to happen for a while.
Do you think Exxon has reached its peak?
I think Chevron is a better company. Exxon has a lot of natural gas, and we are so much overloaded with natural gas and oil right now. I think their prices are going to stay fairly low, so their profit margins are going to be hindered. But long term, I have a hard time believing that they wouldn't be a good investment. Okay. Thanks, Sam. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Crystal in the Bay Area. How you doing, Crystal?
Good. I'm was wondering, what do you think about Target, TGT, and what's a good entry point for Target?
I kind of like Target at this point, at this price. Target stores, about 1,792 Target superstores and all, you know, across the nation. It's not a grower. It's a $37 billion company. So it's a very mature company. So you need to buy it when it's at a discount. Okay, that's really what you want to buy Target at. And I don't think Target is not like a big box store like Macy's and the other big box stores. They're a discount store, and they're always going to be popular like Walmart. And so we don't own Target at this point, but I think that it's a good enough bargain. At $5.34 it's going to make per share next year, and a $65 stock, that tells me, what is it, 13, 14 P.E.? Return on equity is pretty high at 22, grade D dividend at 3.6%. It's got enough good, and at the price that it's at, everybody, and it's bouncing off 63, is now almost 66, and it fell to 63, hung around there for a few weeks, and then it's trying to recover after being up at, you know, $78 to $80 a share, falling hard. I think this is where you buy it, Crystal. I think you buy it at this low price. Okay?
Okay. All right. Thanks.
TGT. You know, it's one of those, it's probably a value stock at this point. It's a value stock. I mean, it's not super cheap, but it's cheap enough to attract you. And while you're waiting, you're paying 3.6% dividend. Not too bad. Existing home sales came out, rose month over month to a 10-year high, despite higher interest mortgage rates and a leaner supply. Supply is only 3.6 months worth of supply for existing home sales. That's very low. And we're at 5.69 million sales. Now, that's way, way below the peak in 2006 or 7, way below the peak. But I think it surprised everybody, because everybody thought with higher interest rates, mortgage rates, and a tight supply, that sales would not be higher. And that was after a revised up for December. Still was higher in, you know, so in January. These are January numbers, so maybe we don't have, you know, we don't have February numbers, so we can't, maybe it is. One thing in the report that I didn't like, though, that Fannie Mae decided to allow securitization for Wall Street to invest in purchases of single-family homes. I don't like that securitization by Wall Street. Smacks of the cause for the big financial fall. Our time is up for this hour. If you'd like to contact me directly with a personal message, just click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. On behalf of Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for being with us today. And let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.